following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York. Well, it's here. The Belmont Stakes Festival at Saratoga Racecourse gets underway Thursday. 4 days of racing, of course, highlighted by the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. Belmont Park being reconstructed, and that'll be ready in 2026. For the next 2 years, the Saratoga Racecourse will host the Belmont Stakes. So a lot of fun. We're going to talk a lot about that. Mike Gaddin with his At the Track with Mac segment, although when we talked to Mac at the beginning of the show, I forgot to mention that was At the Track with Mac. But we'll talk to him about that. And we'll also talk with Richard Meekley, our former jockey, now an analyst for Fox Sports. Fox Sports will be televising the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. And if you're listening locally in the Capital Region, you can find that on Fox 23. So Richard Meekley and I discussed the race as well. And then we turn our attention to the Stanley Cup Final, which starts Saturday between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. And I'm going to make my pick right now because I'm thinking about it, and I'm going with the Panthers in six. I did not do well in my picks on the conference final. But Edmonton and Florida playing some good hockey right now, and Pierre McGuire and I will discuss the final and what happened to the Rangers against the Panthers in that Eastern Conference final. The Rangers did not look like the same team that rolled into the first two rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They just looked fatigued, especially in those third periods. And quite frankly, they were lucky to win Game 3. They were outchanced in that game badly, and it just took a fortuitous bounce in overtime for the Rangers to win that game. But the Florida is playing well, and that's why I'm going to go with him in six games. So coming up, it's Mike McAdam previewing the Saratoga Racecourse Belmont Stakes Festival. And this is part of the At the Track with Max segment. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Shenandoah Breer. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and it's here. Finally, it's here after all the preparation to get ready for the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. The Belmont Stakes Festival gets underway Thursday with the racing. A lot of activity going on Wednesday. And Mike McGaddin's been busy preparing for this. A lot of great stuff appeared in Sunday's Daily Gazette, and he's here to join us to talk about the upcoming meet, the 4 days of racing at Saratoga Racecourse. And Mike, how happy are you that it's finally here?
Somebody asked me about it yesterday, and the quote that popped in my head was Gregory Peck in the Guns of Navarone to David Niven when he said, "Son, you're into it now, all the way up to your neck." So that's kind of what it feels like. We're kind of immersed in it and have been for a couple weeks now. I know the fans and everybody, they're not going to see anything until Thursday, but there's so much prep work that goes into it and so much reporting and being there in the morning. Our photographer, Erica Miller, we were reunited with her for this assignment. She has a different job now, but we were at the track at 5:30 in the morning. Actually, I was there at 5. I broke a record on the Northway getting from Schenectady. to watch, you know, the Kentucky Derby winner, Mystic Dan, work out at, you know, right around 5:30, 6 o'clock. So we've been kind of like had our noses deep into it. I will be thrilled when we actually get to see some racing, because it's amazing how much content you crank out in preparation for events like this, and then you just kind of want the days to get there so you can actually see some live action.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously we don't have a Triple Crown at stake, but the fact that the Saturday's Belmont Day is sold out, does that surprise you?
No, not at all. In fact, the only thing that does surprise me is that the other days haven't really sold out. You know, and I guess they don't need to be. You can kind of wait for the secondary market to kind of take a look at it at the last minute, and there's probably going to be a flurry of secondary ticket sales going on for those other days. I don't know if they're going to sell out or not, but I'm thinking it'll be a disappointment if they don't get at least, you know, 40,000 for Thursday. Friday, I think, is sold out. And then Sunday, you know, I would think they would get 40,000. That's a reflection of two things. Saturday makes sense, and it's sold out very quickly because it's the Belmont Stakes, and you know, they always get big crowds for that. But the added component is it's at Saratoga this year. So people are picking up those tickets just because they want to go to Saratoga. It's like bonus Saratoga time before the meet starts on July 11th. In fact, I was talking to trainer Todd Pletcher, who, by the way, has 3 horses in the 10-horse field for the Belmont, the other day. And he said the difference is Belmont's always going to be a huge day, but it's the other 3 days are not big days. But up here, the other days are going to be big days too, which is a reflection of the appeal of Saratoga. So that's kind of that's what I'm reading right now.
Yeah, you covered nearly the Belmont Stakes nearly 20 times, and do you feel there's a different vibe up there?
Oh, absolutely. And again, it goes back to you know, I was talking to Gary Contessa, another trainer who has a couple horses in some of the other stakes races this week, yesterday, and you have two things. You have the Belmont, but you have Saratoga, and the combination of those two things make the vibe a little different, a little more intense. He mentioned that even his cleaning lady has been talking about it, and she barely speaks English. So it's, you know, you go around town, and there's a certain extra buzz here because of that.
Yeah. Well, we've had a ridiculous string of beautiful weather, although we're taping on this Tuesday afternoon. It's a little cloudy out there right now. But apparently the bill comes due on Thursday, and it's supposed to start raining and nonstop, meteorologist Mike Beadams says.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not in that profession. Only, you know, picking horses every once in a while. I do better than I do with the weather, and that's not saying much. It's weird because, like, on Monday I checked it and actually was very optimistic. Like, Thursday's kind of been holding steady, is going to be a, you know, not a great day. But at least Monday, when I was looking at it, you know, it looked like it was going to maybe steadily improve into Saturday. So I was like, okay, if we could just get past Thursday, we'll be good. Then I checked again today, Tuesday, and it was a complete reversal. Thursday's still bad, but into Saturday looking like, you know, 60-70% chance of rain. So maybe not a full soaker, but we're going to get something. And, you know, even if it's intermittent on and off, you know, what we've been getting used to over the last few weeks, we're not going to see any of that. So maybe it'll change again. I don't know. But either way, Thursday is sort of like kind of hanging in there as being a day that they're talking about some rain.
Yep. Before we get to the big race itself, there are 23 other stakes during the 4 days of the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. And you've got a top five of the ones that you're particularly interested in. What are they?
Well, here we go. And, you know, I will say that whenever you get into, like, Belmont Day or Derby Day or Travers Day or Whitney Day, that single race is not the whole shooting match here. They always stack a lot of other stakes, so you know, and good ones. So it's almost like an all-star crew of races and the horses that are in them. Out of those other 23, the five that I'm kind of focusing on, is it five? Yeah, it's five. Friday is the Grade One Acorn, which is restricted to 3-year-old fillies going a root of ground on the dirt. And these are fillies that we're going to see again in at the Saratoga meet in races like the Coaching Club America Oaks and the Alabama, which are two of the big ones of the meet. to Nine Horse Field in the Acorn. Six of them ran in the Kentucky Oaks on the Friday before the Derby at Churchill, including the top three, Torpedo Anna, Just FYI, and Regulating Risk. Torpedo Anna is so good that trainer Kenny McPeak was going to stick her in the Belmont if his Derby winner, Mystic Dan, for some reason didn't make the Belmont. So he actually had a second choice, and it's his filly. That's how good she is. Another one in there is Gunsong, who won the Black Eyed Susan, which is kind of considered the second leg of that, you know, unofficial Triple Crown for three-year-old fillies. That's on Friday. Then on Saturday, we got the Grade 3 Poker. Our old buddy Casa Creed, who we talked about last year, he's 8 years old now. He swept the Kelso and the four-star Dave and was a real fan favorite. You know, just this grizzled old warrior, you know, still winning big stakes races. And he'll face off what the horse that I kind of consider was the, like, three-year-old version of Casa Creed last year, our buddy Carl Spackler, who swept the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame race in the Saranac at Saratoga last year. So we'll see those two go at it in the poker. Really looking forward to, and I believe this is by far the shortest odds of any horse on the entire four-day Belmont Festival, is Idiomatic, last year's champion, older dirt female. She's 3-5 in the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps. She's 8-9 in last year. Just a ridiculous season for her. I mean, she's all on her way to the Hall of Fame. Among her wins last year with Personal Ensign at Saratoga and the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So really looking forward to her. Even if she wins by 10 lengths, that's going to be one of those races where you're just like, I just want to see this star, you know, do her thing. Then we move into the Grade 1 Woody Stevens, which is kind of like the alternate three-year-old race, graded stakes race on the card to the Belmont itself, restricted to three-year-olds, and that's a real interesting bunch. We got Imagination from Bob Baffer, who was seventh in the Preakness. We've got the two horses that finished second and third behind Seize the Gray in the Pat Day Mile on Kentucky Derby Day. That would be Nash and Vlahos. And anybody who was at Saratoga on closing day last year and saw the hopeful, they saw Nutella Fella at 54-1 win, and he's making his comeback. He has not raced since the hopeful. And again, he's trained by Gary Contessa, who said he had a little crack in one of his left hind leg that they needed the whole winter to kind of heal, and he's back to 100%. So if you saw Nutella Fella and you're wondering what he did, he's been doing since the hopeful on closing day of the Saratoga meet last year. He's been doing nothing except healing and then getting back into form, but he's in the Woody Stevens. And then last but not least, one of the most historic, greatest races on the NIRA calendar over the, you know, historically, is the Grade 1 Met Mile. And that field is really interesting. It's a small field of six, but we've got the 6-5 favorite, White Abario, who won the Whitney in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year, and 8-5 National Treasure, who won the Pegasus World Cup. He won the Preakness last year. He's coming off a fourth-place finish in the Saudi Cup, so it'll be kind of interesting to see those two butt heads. I will say about the Met Mile, it's going to be a little quirky this year because at Belmont Park, the track is so big that they actually have a one-mile shoot. If you're familiar with the 7-furlong shoot at Saratoga, well, they have one at Belmont, but it's so that they can run a one-turn mile on the main track. You can't do that at Saratoga because it's a smaller track. So 2 years ago, they installed what's called the Wilson Chute, which is kind of this awkward angle thing that goes into the first turn, and it, you know, it's just kind of awkward and quirky. And I know a lot of the purists are going to be grumbling about the fact that a great prestigious race like the Met Mile is being run on this weird course, but they didn't really have any choice, so we'll see how that goes. Six-horse field, hopefully the post positions won't play into it too much.
Of course, the purists may be upset that the fact that the Belmont Stakes are not running at the normal distance.
Yeah, some people are saying there should be an asterisk. My friend Teresa Gennaro wrote a great column for us that was in Monday's paper, or Tuesday's paper, just examining the history of the various distances that the race has been run at since it was first run at 1867, by the way. It's been a mile and a half consistently for a very long time. Belmont Park opened in 1905, but again, because of the smaller configuration at Saratoga, to run a mile and a half on the main dirt track, you'd have to basically start it at the beginning of the turn, which would give certain horses an advantage, and it would just, you know, like if you've ever seen a track meet where they run sprints where they have a staggered start because the inside, you know, just simple geometry, the inside is going to be a shorter path than the outside. It's not fair, and you can't do a staggered start in horse racing because they all have to start laterally from the same point in the starting gate. So, yeah, some people are going to grumble about it, but they, you know, pretty much need to get a life.
Yep. Well, let's look at the Belmont Field and your top pick, and readers will have to pick up the Gazette or go to dailygazette.com to get your full superfecta.
Yeah, they should go to dailygazette.com, the website, yeah, anyway, yeah, because true. We have just been cramming that site with stuff. Go to the sports button, hit it, and pull down the menu at the bottom. There's a title that says Add to Track. Hit that, and then just go down that rabbit hole, because we've been supplying a ton of stuff that's still there and really fun, interesting, historical stuff. So I would strongly recommend people for that, if not to find out what my pick is this weekend. But just running through the field again, we got it's a 10-horse field, very interesting. We have both the Preakness and Derby winners, and neither of them is the favorite, which was not that hard or to predict or very surprising at all. The 9-to-5 favorite is Chad Brown-trained Sierra Leone, who was second in the Kentucky Derby to Mystic Dan. But probably should have won the race. He was swapping paint with Forever Young in the middle of the track. And meanwhile, Mystic Dan was under Brian Hernandez, was sneaking up the rail and hanging on to win by a nose. As soon as that race was over, I was like, I cannot wait to bet Sierra Leone in the Belmont or pick him in the Belmont. He's 9-to-5. Two things that were surprising. Tim Wilkin and I were at the draw last night at Universal Preservation Hall in Saratoga Springs, and they were kind of dawdling, and this thing was supposed to start at 5, and all of a sudden it's quarter after. I don't know what the delay was, but I said, all right, let's play a little fun game here. Let's each write down our top four picks and the odds that we think David Aragona will assign to them. And we were very similar, but the funny thing is, the horse that turned out to be the second choice on the morning line is Mindframe at 7-to-2. And Timmy and I, neither of us had him even in our top four as far as the morning line. I'm not talking about predicting the order of finish. But so 7-to-2 Mindframe, one of the three Pletcher horses in there. He's 2-for-2. He's undefeated, but he's never run in a stakes race. And now all of a sudden he's the second favorite out of 10 horses in the Belmont. It was kind of interesting. The third choice was your Derby winner, Mystic Dan, at 5-to-1. And we were both off trying to predict what his odds were. I think I had 5-to-2, and they got him at 5-to-1. Let's see. The other Pletchers are Protective, who is a maiden. He's 0-for-4 in his career, so he's never even won a race. So he's a long shot. And Antiquarium, who won the Peter Pan at Aqueduct, is the other Pletcher horse at 12-to-1. So kind of a cool, interesting field top to bottom. You got to see my picks online, cause I haven't figured out how I'm even going to fill out my superfecta yet. I got a couple different ideas. I don't know what to do with Seize the Gray, the 8-to-1 Preakness winner, because he kind of got away with a pretty comfortable trip in the Preakness on the front end with nobody, really challenging him early. And he had enough to hang on at the end. I don't know if he's going to get away with that this time, especially from the one hole where jockey Jamie Torres is probably going to have to send him right out of the starting gate. So I'm going to play around with the second, third, and fourth place spots on my superfecta. But Sierra Leone is a no-brainer. Horse has been training great, trained by Chad Brown. Jockey changed from Tyler Gaffleone to Flavian Pratt for kind of a little mistake that Chad thought Tyler made in the Derby. So there's a lot to like about this horse, and Chad Brown's been gushing about him all like the last 2 weeks about how he does exactly what he wants in his training, and it just a, you know, really quality horse who's doing everything right now. So for me he was a pretty easy pick. And you know, it's kind of reflected in the morning line that he was the favorite, even though the Preakness and Derby winners are in there.
Well, you can follow Mike's coverage of the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga at, on X, formerly Twitter, at Mike_McAdam, and, of course, online at dailygazette.com and the print edition. Mike, have fun up there. Enjoy the 4 days. We never actually forgot to mention that this was the At the Track with Max segment on this. So,
because it's not too late.
Yeah, and we just did that. Yeah. So it's been overwhelming getting ready for this. So have fun, and we'll obviously chat before the start of the Saratoga meeting next month.
Here it comes. As soon as we catch our breath from this, it's going to be a couple of weeks, and next thing you know, we're going to be back up there at 5:30 in the morning, watching somebody else work.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue our talk of the Belmont Stakes in Saratoga with Richard Migliore. He's going to be on Fox Sports' coverage of the races on Saturday. So we'll come back with him. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Meet Andrew Waite. He's a dedicated journalist with a passion for research and a commitment to getting all sides of the story.
Whether it's a local issue or an upstate trend, I do the stories and interviews that shed light on what's important to you.
Stay informed. Read Andrew Waite in the Daily Gazette.
It's my job to offer commentary about what's happening in our community and what it means to our readers.
The Gazette, reporting based on accuracy and integrity.
It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Union Men's Hockey alum Charlie Moxham. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. My next guest won over 4,400 races over a three-decade career as a jockey. He will be part of the Fox Sports broadcast team for Saturday's coverage of the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. I'm honored to welcome Richard Migliore to the podcast. Richard, welcome to the Parting Shots podcast on your maiden voyage. How are things going up in Saratoga right now?
Things are going really well. Thank you. Great feeling, great energy here in the town. I drove up really early Saturday morning because I wanted to catch a bunch of the Belmont horses that were scheduled to work. So I left home at 2:45, got here at 5:20, and was able to witness all of those works, Sierra Leone, as well as Mystic Dan, Torpedo Anna, who'll be running in the Acorn. And the one thing that struck me as I walked through town that afternoon was, you know, Saratoga holds a great energy. There's always a feel of excitement. It's even, you know, multiplied this year. You can just feel it. And everybody that in town, people that live here year round, they want to stop you and talk about it. They're excited. And I think it's a great venue for an American classic, America's classic racetrack with an American classic race. I mean, this is the home to the Racing Museum and Hall of Fame, and just adding another layer to the rich history that it's already Saratoga.
Yeah, normally when the Belmont Stakes doesn't have a Triple Crown situation, really it's an afterthought, but the Saturday's race is sold out. And what does that tell you, that the fact that, you know, having this race up here while they reconstruct Belmont Park, what does that mean to you that these fans will come here just to see the race, even though they know there's not a Triple Crown on the line?
Well, the Belmont's still a very important race in its own right. And, you know, this year we have the Kentucky Derby winner, Mystic Dan, coming back against your Preakness winner, Seize the Gray. And they ran 1-2 in the Preakness. So I think it has the makings of a budding rivalry. And then you add into the mix Sierra Leone, who was, I think, an unlucky loser of the Kentucky Derby. He was difficult to handle. You know, everybody knows he has that propensity to want to lug in, running with new equipment. You know, here's a horse that's two noses shy of being undefeated. And you can make the case he was best in both of those races. The lugging in hampered the rider's ability to ride him in a fashion that gave him his best chance. So I think we have a very competitive race. I think we have a really still wide open 3-year-old championship, season going on, and we're still looking for someone to kind of step to the fore and lay claim to being the leader of this division. And I think this Belmont Stakes is going to go a long way to answering those questions.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that the previous winners, Mystic Dan of the Kentucky Derby, Seize the Gray, the Preakness winner, are here. But Sierra Leone's was picked as a morning line favorite 9-5. Does that surprise you or not?
It does not surprise me. And I will say this as well. You know, 3-year-old horses change a great deal in short amounts of time. And usually you start to see it, particularly with the colts, by the beginning of February, and they'll change a great deal over the next 4 or 5 months. The biggest move forward from a physical standpoint has been Sierra Leone since the Kentucky Derby. He's always been a big, strong, imposing individual. I think he's even bigger and stronger now. I think he had a growth spurt, but in a good way. He's filled out in a good way. He's just a big, strong individual, and he's already been, again, a nose shy from winning the Derby. And I think from a physical perspective, you're going to see even a bigger, better version of Sierra Leone this time. The change of equipment, it remains to be seen if it's going to kind of solve the problem of the lugging in, but he's looked good training it in the morning. Now it needs to translate to the afternoons.
Yeah. The race is going to be run at a shorter distance than what we see at the Belmont. It's a mile and a half down at Belmont, but it's going to be a mile and a quarter at Saratoga. And there's some purists out there think that this is not a quote unquote a real Belmont because it's not being run at the normal distance. But what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I'm a traditionalist myself. I would consider myself more of a purist. But if you look through the history of the Belmont Stakes, it's been run at five different distances, from a mile and an eighth to a mile and five eighths over the history of the race. Now, obviously, in the modern era, it's been a mile and a half for an elongated period of time. It's also been run at five different venues before this year in Saratoga, starting at Morris Park up in the Bronx. The first seven or eight runnings were in Morris Park. It's been run at Aqueduct. It's been run at Jamaica, and, you know, obviously at Belmont. So, you know, yes, I would love to see it a mile and a half. There are extenuating circumstances. We have a massive reconstruction at Belmont. I think, you know, ultimately it's going to be a wonderful thing to bring that facility, Belmont Park, into the modern era, because it's been pretty much an outdated facility for a long time. So, yeah, I agree. I wish it was a mile and a half. It's not. It also hasn't been always a mile and a half. So, you know, the purists maybe want to do their research as well. You know, in life, that's in everything else. If you're not evolving and changing, well, you're going the wrong direction.
Yeah. Teresa Gennaro, Gennaro wrote a column about that, just explaining the distance. So, it's amazing to me the history of this race in different distances. So, I mean, I think we're fine. Just, you know, extenuating circumstances, and we'll just have to, the horse race fans will have to live with it for a couple of years before we go back down to Belmont in 2026.
Absolutely. And it'll get back to what, you know, we've all become accustomed to. And again, at a new modern facility that I think everybody's going to be impressed with. And, you know, for me, I'm just thrilled that I'm going to be a small part of the history that's going on here. This is history making.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as I said in the open, you have 4,400 victories over a 3-decade career. What are your memories of, first of all, Saratoga when you were racing?
Well, you know, I mean, I came up here the first time as a 15-year-old kid on a horse van, galloping horses for my contract holder, Steve DeMauro, and I can recall that day, you know, the horse van pulling off the Northway on the Union Avenue and popping my head out and being completely enraptured with this place. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. This is a pretty, you know, far cry from where I grew up. And to see this place, I knew that I wanted to spend my summers the rest of my life here as an apprentice jockey, breaking Steve Cawthon's apprentice jockey records here in Saratoga, doing in 8 months what it took him 12 months to do. And just in general, the time spent here with my family, my children have amazing memories of this place, and the history. You can come to Saratoga in the middle of winter and you can feel the ghosts of racing past. You can walk down the street and bump into somebody that wants to talk about racing with you. It's just a really wonderful, timeless place in a lot of ways.
What about the Belmont Stakes? What memories do you have of that?
Well, you know, listen, I never was fortunate enough to win the Belmont. I had a couple of fourth place finishes. I got to ride in it. You know, I was there as a kid for a Firmed and Aladar, one of the greatest Belmonts ever run, with a Triple Crown on the line. Just the day in itself, you know, the Belmont Stakes, obviously the marquee event, but there is just one championship event after another. And we've got pretty much every division covered over the 4 days. This is like an early season Breeders' Cup in a lot of respects. A lot of people love to talk about why wouldn't they ever have a Breeders' Cup in Saratoga? Well, the Breeders' Cup is usually, you know, run early November, late October. And anybody that knows this area, you can have a foot of snow that time.
Yeah.
Of year. Right. So you really can't roll the dice with that. But for this time of year, I think we're presenting what could be described as an early season Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, Breeders' Cup would be magnificent, but as you said, the weather is just, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. What other races are you looking at during this Belmont Stakes Festival at Saratoga?
Well, I'm a really big Torpedo Anna fan, the Kentucky Oaks winner, and she worked actually right at 5:30 Saturday morning. She looks fantastic, great energy level. Kenny McPeak was toying with the idea of running her in the Belmont Stakes against the Colts. And ultimately, because Mystic Dan has done so good out of the Preakness, he's going to go in the Belmont with him and the Acorn with Torpedo Anna. But I honestly, if Torpedo Anna ran in the Belmont, I think she would have been my top selection. I think she's every bit as talented as any of the Colts. I think she's a very special kind of filly. And honestly, she's only been defeated once, and she had a lot of early trouble in that race. You can make the case she should be undefeated as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her. I'd be surprised if she doesn't give us all something to talk about.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about the, you know, being a purist traditionalist. There's been talk over the last couple of years about the Preakness deciding they want to move an extra week and make it 3 weeks between the Derby and Preakness. And it's sort of Naira said, well, maybe not. Do you think at this day and age, it's time to consider maybe having a three-week break between the Derby and the Preakness, and then 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont?
That's a great question, and honestly, I vacillate back and forth, you know, the pros and cons of it. Would it, you know, taint if a horse was to win all three then? Would it, you know, people want to put an asterisk on it? Well, you know, they didn't do it in the five-week span. They did it in the six-week span or whatever it may morph into. But then also we have to be realistic that horses do not race as often as they used to. The breed doesn't seem quite as hardy as it once was. But also, you know, there were times when the Preakness was run before the Kentucky Derby.
Mm-hmm.
There were times when there was less spacing between all three. There was time when there was more spacing between all three. So, you know, one thing about tradition is sometimes things change and they become new traditions. Again, I don't have a clear, hard opinion about it. I feel like it's supposed to be hard, and that's what makes it great, so we should leave it alone. But I'm not so adverse to if they decided to get together and tweak it, but I think it has to be a concerted effort by all three racetracks involved. Obviously, Churchill Downs wouldn't have to change anything, but Pimlico, you know, the Stronach Group and the New York Racing Association, I think, would have to really get together and be on the same page, and then I think it could work.
You mentioned Pimlico. Obviously, they're going to reconstruct that track as well. I mean, how important is that for Baltimore and Pimlico to keep the Preakness there once it's a new facility?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to that whole area, and you know, that facility absolutely has needed to be, you know, redone for a very, very long time. But, you know, the Preakness was actually run in New York for a bunch of years as well. People may not know that. So, again, as more things change, you look back, things have kind of always changed a little bit here and there.
Yeah. Are you ready to share your pick to win the Belmont Stakes? Or you want to say that till Saturday?
No. I'm actually pretty bullish about the favorite. I do think that Sierra Leone is the best horse. I think he'd have to get unlucky to lose, or if his lugging in problem really raised its head again. Although I think with the new equipment, I really don't believe that'll be a problem. I think Mystic Dan, you know, it's interesting about horses. Mystic Dan, you know, ran hard in the Derby, and I thought, man, he can't replicate that effort in the Preakness. And then I thought he ran just as good a race in the Preakness. He just hit a horse, Seize the Gray, who I think has gotten good. And watching him train since the Preakness, I feel like he's almost gotten better because of the workload. You know, racing sometimes tears a horse down. They lose a little weight. They get a little dehydrated. They suck up. He's gone the other way. It's actually built him up. I think he's going to run another big race. I think Sierra Leone will win. I think Mystic Dan will give a good account of himself. I think anybody that is going to throw out Seize the Gray and just term the Preakness a fluke, I think they're making a big mistake. I think this is a horse that's changed, developed, and gotten good at the right time. And if I had to pick a long shot that I think will run well is Bill Mott's horse, Resilience. He had a very difficult trip in the Derby, and I watched him train here over the weekend, and I think he is sitting on a really, really big race.
Well, coverage of the Belmont Day on Fox begins at 4 o'clock on Saturday. Richard, we'll be looking forward to your analysis and appreciate a few minutes.
No, thank you. It was always fun to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, that's Richard Migliori. We've had talk Stanley Cup Finals with Pierre McGuire next. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Just didn't want it bad enough. That should have been an easy win. What were you doing out there? You gotta hustle. You could have made that play if you'd been open.
On the car ride home after the game, when you think you're helping by telling me what I did wrong and what I need to work on, all I hear is that I'm not good enough, that I'm supposed to be perfect, that it's not okay to lose. On the car ride home, all I need to hear is how much you love me and enjoy watching me play. That my worth isn't determined by my performance. That even on my worst day, I am worthy. That you see me learning, growing, and doing my best. And that is enough.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Chad Arnold. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and now it's time for the Stanley Cup Finals. The Florida Panthers and Edmonton Oilers will meet for the right to carry Lord Stanley's Cup, and Pierre McGuire, NHL analyst, joins us now, as he always does during this postseason. Pierre, I don't know if we expected this kind of matchup, but this should be a pretty exciting final.
I think it will, Ken, and I agree with you, and it's very nice to visit with you and your listeners again. Thank you so much for having me. You know, Ken, I have to tell you, I'm not surprised about Florida beating the Rangers. I just thought that they were the meaner team, the bigger team, the rougher team, the more playoff-ready team, if that makes sense, talking about Florida. And on the other side, I really thought Dallas had it in them, but I thought about it last night as I was working for the NHL during the broadcast of the game, and I said, you know, people forget that Dallas had to go through the defending champs, Vegas. They beat them in seven games, and they were down 2-0 in that series, but they still came back to win. They had to go against Colorado, who had won the championship 2 years earlier. So the last two Stanley Cup champs, Dallas had to play in the first two rounds, and they had to play Denver at altitude, which is very, very difficult. And then to compound it, and this was the third thing I thought of, and Ken, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, Dallas had to play a double overtime game in game one against Edmonton, and they lost that game. Mm-hmm. And they had a double minor to start overtime in the first overtime period, Connor McDavid with a high stick, and they still lost the game. And I wonder how much that affected them, because they were chasing the rest of the series. They were never large and in charge in the series. So the fact that Edmonton won and there was no seventh game, I'm really impressed by Edmonton, but I just don't know how much juice Dallas had left in the tank.
Well, I look back, you know, game was the game four. Dallas was up 2-0 in that game, and then Edmonton comes back to win. And I think that's really turned the momentum of that series, because Edmonton goes into Dallas, dominates down there, and, you know, Sunday night, 10 shots on goal for Edmonton, and they still won the game.
Oh, yeah, no, but, you know, you got to give Stuart Skinner some real props mm-hmm. on that. That was impressive by Stuart Skinner. Probably the best game he played the entire playoff. And that, a lot of Dallas shots, I know, were from the outside. But when it came to money time, when it really came to winning time in the last 7 minutes of the game, Stuart Skinner had to come up with three or four really important saves for the Edmonton Oilers. So I give him a lot of credit. Obviously, the coaching staff in Edmonton deserves a lot of credit. Chris Knobloch, Paul Coffey, Mark Stewart. They did some really, really good work out there, and they got that team turned around, and now they get to go to the Stanley Cup final, which is an amazing experience.
And you think Stuart Skinner was benched in that series against Vancouver late in that series? I mean, Edmonton had some goaltending issues heading into this final round, the conference final with Dallas, but Skinner turned things around. He looks a lot more confident than they did early in that Vancouver series.
It's an amazing story. Kenny Danico, who's a former New Jersey Devil, three-time Stanley Cup winner, and does such a good job on MSG doing the Devils games. He was on the show I was working on last night. And Kenny and I, when we were players, were both in training camp in New Jersey together. We've known each other over 40 years. And we were talking about, you know, being an Edmonton kid. That's where Kenny's from. He grew up there, and he played in the Western Hockey League before he got to New Jersey. I was saying, could you imagine, Kenny, like, this kid, Stuart Skinner, born and raised in Edmonton, played in the Western Hockey League, and now he's back in Edmonton, and he's bringing the Edmonton Oilers to the first Stanley Cup final since 2006. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable thing. It really is.
I want to go back to the Panthers-Rangers series for a moment here. I agree with you. The Panthers just wore the Rangers down. If you watch those third periods in that series, it seemed like the Rangers just had no life. They were lucky to win game three because they were outchanced so badly in that game. And then, I don't know, somehow they won that game. But you could just tell they just did not have the legs. And I think just Florida physically wore them down.
I think you're spot on, Ken. I really do. The cycle game for Florida is amazing. The forecheck game for Florida is off the charts. But here's the thing that's not getting enough credit, and I hope the TV network, I know ABC and ESPN have the final, will do something on it. It's called the strong side pinch. So if the puck's coming up the right-hand boards of the Florida Panthers, so it'd be Florida's left defense would pinch down, they do this better than any team in the league, and they're totally committed to it as a group. And if the puck reverses and it's coming out, you know, the one team's left-hand side, it would be Florida's right defenseman pinching down. They keep the play alive in the offensive zone better than any team I've seen. I have not seen a team execute this as well as probably the late 1980s Boston Bruins. They used to play in those days. It was called a full five-man forecheck. And that, because the rink was smaller in mm-hmm. Boston, it yep. was also smaller in Buffalo, so they could do that. But I haven't seen a team do it as well as Florida in the modern era. I really haven't. It's just amazing to me. And that's the thing that I think people weren't ready for on the Rangers side of things. You could see they just never made an adjustment to it.
And the other thing with Florida, they're healthy going into the finals this year. Last year they were getting just basically beat up heading into the finals. And I said at the start when we talked earlier on one of our previews, I honestly didn't think Florida was going to be able to get back to where they were because they had those number of injuries. But they overcame them, and they just seen on a mission here and to bring the Panthers their first Stanley Cup.
It was part of, you know, last year when they played Vegas in the final, Vegas was fresh, and Vegas had big mountains on the back end, like big, huge trees for players on the back end, and they just couldn't get to the net last year. And you're right, I don't think they were 100%. It's not going to be the same kind of challenge with Edmonton. Edmonton's defense is big, but they're not nearly as robust as what Vegas's was, and they're not nearly as good moving the puck as Vegas's was last year. So I think that's going to be a bit of an issue for Edmonton. They'll have to figure it out. You know, they were hanging on by the skin of their teeth last night in the last 26 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
The entire third period in the last 6 minutes of the second period. They were hanging on by the skin of their teeth to get through that.
Yeah, it was like 17 left in the third period when they finally hit double digits in shots on goal. I think it was like the fewest shots on goal in a cup in a playoff clinching game in a while. So it's amazing to me. Pierre, the Florida Cards, you know, as we mentioned, played in the finals last year. How much is that experience going to help them going into this final?
A ton. You know, I can tell you this from having been part of two Stanley Cup winning teams and having broadcast 20 Stanley Cup final. It's amazing. Everybody wants to be in the Stanley Cup final. Everybody dreams about it. But until you get there, you think you know, but you don't know. I can just tell you, you don't know. And what players, and I was talking to Kenny Danico about this last night too, you know, you think you really got it, your finger on it. You've been in the league 5 to 7 years. You haven't got to the final, but you know what it's about. You know what playoff hockey's about. And then you get to the final and you're like, holy moly, this is not what I was expecting. It's just everything ramps up. Media ramps up. You know, noise levels ramp up. Exposure ramps up. Mistakes are magnified. It's just everything's just a little quicker. And after you do it once, you're so much better prepared for the second time, and you're so much better in it. You know, I can remember in 91, we were good, and we ended up beating Minnesota, the North Stars back then, mm-hmm. in six games. But in 92, we were so much better as a group. And, you know, we won. And this is something for your listeners I think they'll appreciate. There's only one team in the history of the NHL, only one, that's ever won 11 straight games to win the Stanley Cup. And that was the 1992 Pittsburgh Penguins. And you know, you think about it, three against the Rangers in the second round, three straight, four straight against Boston in the Eastern Conference Final, and four straight against Chicago in the Stanley Cup Final. That's never been done before, and it's not been done since.
Yeah.
That's an amazing record. And it speaks to what I'm talking about, the experience we had from 91 winning to 92 being there. Was amazing, and we were just so much more comfortable as a group in 92 compared to where we were in 91.
Yeah, that was an amazing run. Yeah, unfortunately, next year it ended on the Islanders' overtime goal, but they were fun teams to watch. I mean, they made some good trades getting Rick Tocchet from the Flyers, Ron Francis, which, by the way, why haven't the Penguins retired Ron Francis's number?
Good question. I don't know the answer to that. There's not a lot of numbers retired there. You've got Briere's number, and he passed away.
1970.
Yep. And then you got Mario Lemieux. You got Jaromir Jagr. So there's not a lot of retired numbers there.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing to me with the contributions he's made over the years with Pittsburgh. But all right. So what's the key? Let's start the key factors in this, starting with the Panthers.
For the Panthers, it's going to be. I think to institute their physical play early without taking penalties. They're going to have to make adjustments on their power play because Edmonton's coming off a playoff series where the Dallas Stars didn't get one power play goal. Edmonton was 14 for 14 on the penalty kill. So Florida's going to have to be ready for that. And then I think the third thing is make sure you have a plan. And it can't always be the same plan. They have to choose because it's double trouble. Either have a plan to shut down Leon Draisaitl or you have a plan to shut down Connor McDavid. You can't have a plan to shut both of them down. So you have to pick one, and I would pick Connor McDavid. So you got to have a plan to shut down McDavid. You got to have a power play that's ready to make adjustments because of the great penalty kill of the Edmonton Oilers, and you got to get to your physical game early without taking penalties.
And how about the Oilers?
The Oilers is really simple. You're going to have to make sure you get a split down in Florida. If you go down 0-2, I don't think you'll be able to come from behind and win. So you got to get a split. That's number one. Number two, I would say speed game. And you have to have the speed game going from all four lines. And if you look at their four lines, the way they're constituted right now, they do have speed on all four lines. The biggest thing, the caveat to what I'm saying, is Evander Kane. He got hurt last night. If Evander Kane's not back for game one, which is Saturday night, that could be a problem for Edmonton. That takes a little bit of the speed portion out of their lineup. And then the third thing is Stuart Skinner is going to have to be what Stuart Skinner was last night and what Stuart Skinner was in game seven in the Vancouver series and what he was. And I want to say it was game four. It could have been game three, but it might have been game 3 or 4 in that, the LA series, where Edmonton won 1-0, and Edmonton only had 13 shots on goal, and Skinner played off the charts good in that game.
Yeah.
So Skinner's going to have to be really good. And to me, the biggest one, like for Edmonton, you got to get a split down there. If you don't get a split in the Stanley Cup final for Edmonton, I think you're going to go out fast.
How much pressure are the Oilers under trying to win Canada's first Stanley Cup since the Canadiens won in 93?
A lot. A lot, I can tell you that. My mom still lives in Montreal. My wife's family all lives in northern Quebec. You know, I got tons of friends across the country. You know, I grew up there. A lot. Serious pressure. It's unfortunate that people take it so provincially, but the truth is that, you know, Canada hasn't had a Stanley Cup parade since 1993. Now, if you look at it, they've had Olympic gold medal parades. They've had a lot of World Junior celebrations. They've had amazing success in women's hockey, and you know, especially at the Olympics and the World Championships. They've done a lot of great things, but the Stanley Cup has been a foreign concept for them since 1993, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Canadians were the last one to be in the final in 2021, because that was a sort of weird.
Yeah, that's an asterisk one, I think, though, Ken, don't you?
Yeah.
Because if the playoffs had really been a playoff year, they wouldn't have made the playoffs that year, no. Which is crazy. It's crazy.
And that was the first time, if you remember, before it really went east-west, I mean, the last time two Eastern teams met for a cup final in that situation was in 80 with the Flyers and Islanders.
That's correct.
So it's it's great. I mean, also, you know, obviously there's some time off for these teams. How important is that before, you know, having some time off before they drop the puck Saturday?
I think it's important for the teams. I don't know if it's good for the game, though. I'm living in Boston right now, and this is a huge hockey market. And you know the one thing they're talking about now?
Celtics.
The Boston Celtics. So hockey's kind of on the back burner here, and this is a massive TV market. You know, New York Rangers, I bet you they're not talking about anything but probably the New York Yankees and how bad the Mets are. You know, yeah. I mean, that's probably what they're doing.
Yeah.
So those are two massive markets, and I don't think they've been talking about hockey in Chicago for a long time, and same thing in Detroit. So it's tough. 1 week off, people will lose interest. That's my concern, but that's a long break.
Well,
that's
a real long break. Yeah, the NBA Finals, I would say the same thing, because I mean, they last played on Thursday when Dallas and Minnesota. Boston hasn't played since last Monday, so. And they start Thursday, so I mean, they've had some time off too. So it's kind of a crazy situation. But well, Pierre, as always, I appreciate a few minutes chatting hockey with you, and I thank you for doing this during the Cup playoffs. And hopefully, we have a 7-game series between these two.
That would be tremendous, Ken. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed doing this with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hopefully, I'll see you somewhere in a college hockey rink if. You know, Northeastern Union end up hooking up somewhere along the way.
That would be good. I'll be at tons of games. I'll be in touch with you. I'll definitely get a lot of games.
Let's hope you're doing the ECA season, the Lake Placid. If you have Union guys up there, I'll see you up there.
That would be great, Tim. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Pierre McGuire. We're back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's Auto Racing Contest in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Marshall Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Ted Remsnyder. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 15 winner in the Daily Gazette's Auto Racing Contest was Kathleen Krahula of Schenectady with 45 points. Kathleen wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Kathleen. The VIP winner was Jerry Peel of Frankensons with 25 points. I'll announce the Auto Racing Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the Auto Racing Contest banner.
Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Mike McAdam, Richard Migliori, and Pierre McGuire for coming on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shots, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.